Hi, this is the first episode of the CS Forum podcast. I'm Randall Snare, and today I'm talking to Jerry McGovern, who's one of our headline speakers at the Content Strategy Forum in London. The forum is from the 5th to the 7th of September in central London. That's 3 days of presentations, workshops, and parties. You should come. Find out more at csforum.eu and register using code PODCAST01 for a £50 discount on the early bird rate. The code is only valid until March 10th, so don't delay. I'm talking to Jerry McGovern, who's one of our keynotes at the Content Strategy Forum 2011. He has been a consultant in web content management since 1994, and he's the author of 5 books. The latest is The Stranger's Long Neck, published by ANC Black. So welcome, Jerry, and thanks for talking to me.
Hello, Randall, thanks for the invite for the chat.
Great. You're the first one, so this is very special.
Okay.
So my first question is, you've been doing this for a very long time, and I wonder what you think about this relatively recent reemergence of this content web industry known as content strategy.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, but most of what I do really isn't connected with content strategy, and I think there's a danger. I'm not quite sure what content strategy actually means. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a danger of the content, the people who love content, me being one of them, you know, coming from writing background and all that, talking to ourselves and making ourselves feel good that content is important. And I really don't, you know, in the organizations I deal with, it's you know, it's not how you're going to get management attention. Mm-hmm. Still, and I think that it's a component of what makes the website successful. But you have to really, I mean, my core focus has been, you know, that what you have a strategy for is the task that the customer is trying to complete, and that to complete that task, you of course will need content, but you'll often need some sort of an application, or you need all sorts of things. But the ultimate measure is, did the person complete the task that they came to the website to complete? And that content in and of itself is essential to that task, but it's not the end game, so to speak. So I don't think it's the strategy. The task completion is the strategy. That would be my opinion anyway.
So you think a strategy is attached to the wrong word there with content strategy?
I think it is. Content is a tactic or a component of making the person successful. You know, that really people come to websites to do things. And most websites, there's very clear things that the majority of people come to that website to actually do. And the question is, were they successful? I think if the person did what they came to the website to do, then everything else is okay. And if they weren't able to do what they came to do, they're not going to say, oh, I really like the content, but I didn't find out if I qualified or not.
Right.
You know, but I thought the content was great. If they didn't find out they qualified, if they didn't book the room, if they didn't do what they needed to do, they're not happy.
Mm-hmm. But you think content is the way to get people to complete their tasks?
I think content is an essential component. I think it's the most important component of making the person successful. I think getting the words right. And I think, again, I have a slightly different conception of content than what some other people would have. I think, you know, the links and the menus are the most essential pieces of content.
Mm-hmm.
that anyone can write. You know, how you choose and how you position those words in your menus and particularly in the links that you create. To me, that's content, and to me, that's the most essential piece of content. So in a way, it is a lot of the most important web content. Isn't even a sentence,
right?
let alone a paragraph.
Well, that's the hardest to write as well, because it's so short.
Exactly. And I think also because great links are action oriented, and most writers are not really trained to create content that is active. They create units of content, you know, articles or chapters or paragraphs, but we never really been trained to link, to right. really create those bridges between two places, and I think that's the biggest skill, and it's the most lacking in all the websites I look at. The number one reason why they fail is confusing menus and links. That's still the biggest issue in the last 10 or 15 years is the quality of the links that they make a promise to the customer and they don't deliver on it.
Mm-hmm. And how do you train people to do that, to sort of change the way they've been thinking their whole lives?
Well, I think the way you train them, Randall, is you train them to manage tasks, to mm-hmm. manage journeys, not... You know, I have people that say to me, you know, I put the link on the homepage, but I'm not responsible for the next page. Well, you're responsible for helping the person be successful, or at least you should be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to get people more focused on managing a task rather than a set of pages, like we do a lot of work with Cisco now and there's a focus. Download software is a key task, and they've all sorts of software that their customers need to download. But now they're establishing a team that's responsible for downloading, you know, rather than right. just responsible for the support homepage or this page or that page. That's actually, you know, they're looking at having teams that are responsible for helping people configure a product, install a product, you know, the various, so managing based on the various tasks that the customer needs to do rather than managing pages. Because when you manage pages, you end up in silos and yeah. you end up focused on the page itself rather than the page as a step in the task that the customer is seeking to complete. And, you know, I think the breakthrough is in getting people to think of, you know, you're helping people get someplace mm-hmm. and move to some sort of a destination. So you got to be thinking about the journey that the customer is on rather than the unit of content that you are creating.
Do you find a lot of resistance to that idea, because it's sort of thinking outside of people's departments?
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of resistance, and there's because it's, you know, the silo, the opposite, you know, a lot of what I stress is customer-centric thinking, focus on the customer, and the opposite of the customer is the organization. So the opposite of customer-centric is organization-centric, and the atomic level of organization centric is department centric.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you got people saying, no, we're the communication, you know, that's an IT problem, you know. Or, you know, I had a person once say to me, you know, I said, you know, nobody's responding. You've got a contact page on your website and people fill it out, but nobody gets back to them. And he looked at me and he says, that's not my problem. He says, I created the form. That's the customer service crowd. It's not my problem that nobody's getting back, you know. And yeah. that's sort of the part, you know, he saw himself as a content professional and his job was to create a form. And he had created a form, and the fact that nobody replied when people filled out that form wasn't his problem.
Yeah. So what do you do? What is the first thing you do when you go into an organization to try to get them to stop thinking the way they've always been thinking?
Well, you know, part is we do two things, and first is there are top tasks. So there's always a war in organizations of, you know, I just got an email today from Liverpool City Council. They used our approach, and they've just launched their new website. And they were, you know, they were saying that, you know, there's top tasks and there's tiny tasks. So there's tasks that are much less important, and then there's these super important tasks. Like we did the National Health Service in the UK there a couple of years ago, and check symptoms was way above, you know. So you go to a health website, there are hundreds of tasks, but check symptoms is the super, it's the book of flight, it's the book of room. Mm-hmm. And you go to a council website, and in Liverpool, it's like rubbish collection, or the centres, the leisure centres. You know, there's a few set of things that has massive demand from the population coming through. So the first step is, what are they? You know, what are these absolutely dominant top tasks? But equally, what are the what I call the tiny tasks? And what, you know, Liverpool was saying in the email was that, you know, actually, without the identification of the smaller tasks and saying, listen, you're not getting on the homepage, it would have been far harder to get to the better website, because much of a web manager's or web team's life is spent trying to deal with the political minor tasks that know they're not that important, and for that very reason spend a huge amount of energy trying to get on the website or get high up the website. So the first step that we do is to clearly create a kind of a league table of what's really, really important. Mm-hmm. And what's not important. And then once you've identified your top tasks, we literally do a time and motion study of them and say, well, here's how well they're performing, you know, and can people actually download software? Can they do these incredibly important things? And in many websites, there's this amazing failure of the top tasks. And by showing that to management and saying these critical things that your customers really, really need to do when they come to your website, they're not able to do them. That can be a transformative moment. Mm-hmm. for management, because what you're able to show then is that the reason they're not able to do them is for a whole variety of reasons. It's content could be one of them, but the application or the IT or the slowness of the website, or, you know, but you're actually saying there's, because what we do is we measure three things: the success rate, you know, how many people successfully completed this critical task. Mm-hmm. Then the disaster rate, where people who think they completed it, but actually didn't. So they think they got the right answer, but it was the wrong answer.
And you call it the disaster rate.
Call that a disaster. And then the final thing is the completion time, which is how long did it take them of those who did complete. And we say that fix the basics is you bring your success rate above 90%, you bring your disaster rate below 5%, and then best practice is you really focus on the time on the task. So we would have target times for all the tasks, or optimal times. So we'd come to an agreement and we'd say, well, how long should it take to do this task? And we'd come up through a variety of methods. We'd say, well, this task, it takes a minute. It should take a minute to complete it. And then when we do the testing, we'd say, well, right now it's taking 6 minutes. And then it would be the objective to bring that 6 minutes down to 1 minute. Mm-hmm. So that would be the model.
And that's really how you get buy-in, because it seems like they would be shocked into submission.
Well, to an extent, yes. I mean, you know, the core thing that I try and get organizations to think about is the customer's time. Mm-hmm. and to treat the customer's time as the most valuable resource, and that, because, you know, everybody understands that when they're on other websites, you know, they want to do things. Even if you're on Facebook or Twitter, the social website, I mean, imagine if it took you 2.5 minutes to make a Twitter post.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Twitter wouldn't be successful.
Right.
You know, I mean, even though these are social places and you spend a lot of time, if you were to spend a huge amount of time doing the administrative elements of these social, making a post, making a comment, you know, putting up your pictures, if it took huge amount of times, you wouldn't use those environments.
Right.
So people's time is incredibly important to them. We can see, like in Bing and in Google, Bing found that if they delayed a typical search results page by 2 seconds, it resulted in a 4% decline in sales.
Really?
So a two-second delay in a search results page, there was a 4% reduction in basically clicks on the ads, which resulted in a 4% reduction in sales. Time is extraordinarily important. And if you really focus on your customer's time, not your time, you know, focus on your customer's time and you save them time, you know, and help them do what they need to do, good things happen.
Yeah, that's a very scary number. You can just say you lose 2% of your business per second that you keep people waiting.
Exactly, yeah. And you know, there's another great organization called Marketing Experiments, and they found they've done tons and tons of work over the years. They're around a long, long time on basically analysis and kind of A/B testing and kind of really rigorous testing of marketing behavior on websites. And they said there's two things that they've learned in all the thousands of experiments they've done. And the first thing is that clarity trumps persuasion, which is actually quite a radical concept from a marketing point of view, because most of traditional marketing is based on the concept of persuasion. So they said in the web, it's clarity. Clarity first and foremost, rather than persuasion. And the second thing they said is the 7 seconds rule, that particularly for a new customer, you've got 7 seconds to convince them that your website is worth staying on and worth investing more time. And if you don't communicate something very clear and very precise in that 7 seconds, you will lose an enormous quantity of people.
Well, that's a good way to get people to cut down on their content and not waffle a bit.
Yes, I think, you know, I think that can... There's the sin of overwriting is still goes on.
Mm. Now, you've spoken a lot around Europe. In fact, are you on the road right now, or are you in Dublin?
I'm not, but I'm just back. I was away for 2 weeks. I spent a week with Microsoft, and then in Seattle, and then I was a number of days in Ottawa in Canada. But most of my time is actually is in North America.
I spend
a fair bit in Scandinavia and parts, but actually most of my work is in North America.
Do you find a cultural difference between North America and, say, Ireland and England and Scandinavia when you go into these corporations and try to change the way they think?
Yeah, there are differences. I think there's much less differences in actual customer behavior. Certainly in Europe and America, I think you would see somewhat more differences in Asia of the type of web page that a typical Asian might like would be a bit different from a European or an American. But I think behavior of the customer is very similar. I think that in Scandinavia, you know, they're very meticulous. They're quite customer centric in Scandinavia. I think, you know, UK and America very very similar as well. Mm-hmm. I think as you move south in Europe, you become a bit more organization centric, a bit more hierarchical and bureaucratic, and and deferent to authority. And, I sense that in Southern Europe, it's
really
more bureaucratic and deferential and less customer centric. But as you go into Northern Europe, it's more, it's more open to those arguments. I think there's a movement as well. The broad movement is very much an evidence-based movement and away from the guru or the expert or the boss or the head person. You know, I think there's a relentless march of evidence, and I think there's also a relentless march of team-based decision making. A lot of people say, oh, you need these, creative people who are, sit like a Buddhist and come up with the new web page after 4 hours of meditation. And I think a lot of that is BS, and I think that's how advertising agencies have got away with such extraordinarily bad websites for so long.
Well, that's heartening. You don't have to be like an evangelical preacher. You can just gather facts and make your case.
Yeah, I think you need to be able to analyze those facts. But I think, and that will come through experience. But I think it's much more facts based. I continuously give pages to audiences where I say, here's two pages that were tested, and one was 40% more successful than the others. Which one was 40% more successful? Now, practically every time that I do it, the audience will say B. 80% of the audience will say page B was 40% more successful, but A was 40% more successful. And I said what we learned from this is that the worst way to design a website is to have five smart people in a room drinking lattes.
How did you get started in web content? Did you come from traditional publishing?
I did, yeah. I was a freelance journalist and I did all sorts of journalism. I came across the web back around 93, 94, and I thought, oh, this is going to change the world. And, I thought this is your chance to actually be part of something that's big and happening. And I went from there. But one of the things that I avoided as I progressed was I avoided talking about content, and I avoided telling people that I was that I had ever been a writer, because you get paid much more if you don't. there is a lack of respect for content in most organizations. And I think part of it is down to that content has never been measurable. That until the web came along, content was never measurable, and the web is the first environment where you can actually measure and you can sift the good content from the bad content. And I think that is a huge potential for somebody who works with words for their career, but I think they need to not to talk about content. You may love content, but don't talk about stats, talk about numbers, talk about successes of customers, talk about the customer's satisfaction figures increasing. That will get far more attention in the vast majority of organizations. That is what they understand as strategic. Customer satisfaction, task completion, because task completion means basically conversion rates. It means all sorts of things, but it means people, the logic of people being able to do things is a very basic management logic that is a kind of foundational in most management thinking. So when you're talking about something like task completion, you're talking two very core management concepts. And then you say, here's how we increase task completion. But you don't say, we love content and content is great, because nobody listens, and nobody who really holds the budgetary and the power within larger organizations cares.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I hear a lot of time people struggling to sell content and content strategy or to talk about its value. But it's true, it's just don't talk about it, talk about the stuff that people actually care about.
Well, there is nothing more important in the web than content, mm-hmm. but don't talk about, you know, talk about, you know, the success of the customer or the lack of success of the customer. You know, focus on the customer, because most organizations realize today that if they're not customer centric, they don't have much of a future. Mm-hmm. You know, so there is a big wave of, you know, the realization that this is the customer's time, that the customer is dominant, you know, that you can't just make a car and expect the customer to buy it. You have to shape yourself around needs and around customers. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a broad recognition. I certainly see it in, you know, Microsofts or Ciscos or IBMs, that if you want to be successful, you have to put the customer at the center of your strategy.
Right. Well, I have one more question, and that is, it's cheating a bit, because I wonder if you can give people a little glimpse of what you're going to talk about in September at the forum.
Yeah, sure. And I think it'll be about a lot of what we've talked about here, mm-hmm. that basically, you know, the web has never been more important, and it's going to grow in importance. So we're in an industry which is vibrant and thriving despite all the recessions. Like, yeah. You know, the web is an area that any sensible company will continue to invest in, mm-hmm. because it is one of the most cost-effective environments to allow people complete tasks. Mm-hmm. You know, more cost-effective than the phone, more cost-effective than face-to-face. So it's you know, if you want to save costs, you go to the web, but you have to do the web properly. So we're in a great industry, but I think we still, you know, I still don't see the business case of the web truly being articulated, like the importance that the website actually does play or should play within an organization. I think most senior managers still don't recognize that, and, you know, how to, you know, raise the importance of the web, get it recognized for its true value, because mm-hmm. I think there's a value gap in the web at the moment, and so it'll be part around that. And I think, as I said earlier, content drives behavior on the web. So those who can work with words in the right way have a tremendous future. But we have to work with words in the right way. And that is, to me, very much an evidence-based approach. Testing.
Right.
You know, continuous improvement based on a model of focusing on, was the person successful, mm-hmm. doing what they needed to do?
Well, great, Jerry. Thanks very much. I certainly learned a lot.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward, as I'm sure everyone else is, to seeing you speak in September.
And I'm looking forward to it as well. It should be a great event, Randall.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks.
That was episode 1 of the CS Forum podcast featuring Jerry McGovern. You can subscribe to future episodes at csforum.eu. Don't forget to register for the conference by March 10th using code PODCAST01 to save £50 on the early bird rate.